You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast.
Welcome into the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast. Tim McMaster here, joined by Jim Duquette. And Jim, first of all, Happy New Year's as we get going in 2016. Thank you very much. Well, as 2016 starts, man, there's still a lot of great players out there on the hot stove market. So let's get into that. And let's start with the position players. I mean, Chris Davis, Alex Gordon, Yoenis Cespedes, Justin Upton. What are all these guys waiting for?
Well, a lot of these guys still have qualifying offers attached to them, too. So I think that's an impact that it's had. You look at some of the teams that are on the rebuild. We've seen a couple of those not maybe willing to spend money. When you look at certainly Philadelphia, a lot of teams in the National League in particular at the bottom half, whether it's Colorado, San Diego, Philadelphia, Atlanta, among others that are kind of looking in that realm and not really spending on the market in the marketplace. So I think there's a couple of factors there. And I think the price tag, like anything, you expect a little bit of a discount once the holidays are over, don't you? You go to the mall, you expect a little bit of a reduction in the price tag. Well, that hasn't happened with these guys right now. And that's, I think, the big part of it is the price and the asking price is still very high. And so teams are sitting it out right now.
I think we thought Jason Hayward signing would maybe open things up. But was he kind of a different case than these other guys because of how young he was?
I think he was different, and Zobrist was a little different because of his versatility. I thought the market for the position players would break, like you mentioned, with Hayward and Zobrist. And since then, we've only seen a couple pitchers go off the board, and guys that didn't have a qualifying offer in Kazmir and Leake in particular. So, yeah, I still think that overall, Hayward, because of the youth, because of the aggressiveness of the Cubs in particular, they end up with both those players. By the way, John Lackey, too, they've been shopping for three of those guys that have signed. I do think that, that has an impact as well. And, we're going to have to sit this out a little bit longer, no question, when it comes to these position players. Still a lot of teams out there that need bats, though. Kansas City, the Angels, the Orioles, the White Sox, all trying to win. And I think they're all guys that would be shopping on that outfield market if Chris Davis were to move on, let's say, in Baltimore's case.
Yeah, a lot of big market teams also did their shopping early. You mentioned it with the Cubs, and the Red Sox took care of their needs. So that took a few teams maybe out of the mix for all these guys. You mentioned the Royals. The more time that goes by, I get the feeling that maybe we see Alex Gordon end up back in Kansas City.
That would be great. And listen, I predicted that because I thought it was the right fit. But if you look at that young core that they have that's won the World Series and went to the World Series 2 years ago, a lot of them are going to be free agents. Eric Hosmer is represented by Scott Boras. So is Michael Moustakas, likely not to sign there. They have a bunch of free agents that are free at the end of the 2017 season, including Lorenzo Cain. So, you look at it. So Gordon, if they were able to sign him and maybe sign up an Escobar and a Cain, they could keep somewhat of that core together. I think Wade Davis is another guy. So they have some options to try to keep this window open. Some of the smaller market clubs, that window closes awful quickly when it comes to success at the major league level, but maybe they can keep that window open if they were able to sign a couple of them.
And what a statement for that fan base, too, it would be to bring back a fan favorite like that. And I'm assuming most of the people in Kansas City kind of felt like, all right, there's no way we're going to have Alex Gordon next year, but to actually bring him back, considering their restraints, from a financial standpoint, would certainly be impressive and I think would be huge for that club. When you talk about those other outfielders, it seems like Cespedes is starting to get narrowed down, but Baltimore is one of those teams you hear, and they still have the Davis issue as well, so maybe that still has to get worked out.
Yeah, and I think from the Orioles standpoint, Tim, they're starting to lose their patience a little bit, and I think that's the one thing when you're negotiating with Scott Boras, he will not hesitate to try to disrupt your winner, try to create this leverage where you have to have his player, and that allows you, or that makes you spend more money than you really want to keep the player, because if you don't get him, there's usually nothing left on the board. So, that's that tricky fine point there that you have to go through with Dan Duquette. I think his juggling act is I have to at least make it appear like I'm interested in others. Whether you are or not, it's a different story. We know that Davis is the best fit. But, another 10 days or so goes by and you don't have Davis in the fold, you can't afford to let any of these other guys go off the table. So I think that's where you're starting to hear these whispers of other names in the mix. There's been no offer exchange yet for Cespedes in Baltimore. And I think the White Sox, I think the Giants are an interesting fit. A couple of those type of teams I think you're going to hear more of.
The Orioles are probably a team that's thrilled that all these guys are still out there because at least it keeps that window open if things with Davis don't work out. How about Upton? Because Justin Upton's the guy that maybe he's the most talented guy left here as far as raw talent, but I feel like we've heard less about him than anybody else.
Been very quiet, you know, with the Justin Upton front. His agent, Larry Reynolds, is below the radar, and he also represents Howie Kendrick. We haven't heard a lot about Howie Kendrick either. So, you know, I think that's more by design than it is anything else. I don't think the level of interest has waned much on Upton. Upton gives you the ability to play left field and right field. You know, right field, you know, is, you know, some teams could use him in right field. Certainly, Baltimore has that ability to put him in right field because they just signed the kid from Korea Kim. So that would be an interesting fit. You know, the Angels could look at him in left field, although they're up against the luxury tax. The Royals would use him potentially as an option. So there are a lot of places. I think the White Sox fit in right field if they can move Avisaíl García. So plenty of teams that would still have interest out there in Upton.
All right, how about that pitching market? Because obviously we saw the big names go fairly early as compared to the hitters market, but it's such a deep free agent class that there's so many options still out there. There's Yovani Gallardo and Wei-Yin Chen, Ian Kennedy, all these guys. It seems like things are heating up a little bit as far as Gallardo goes.
It does. You know, you hear a lot of teams obviously interested. Baltimore's been the one team that's been most associated with him. Royals trying to upgrade. There's plenty of teams out there still looking for pitching. He does have that qualifying offer attached to him, but he's pitched in both leagues, the American League and the National League. He throws strikes, and even though the velocity dipped towards the end of the year, I still think he's a guy of a hot commodity, we'll call him. And so, yeah, I think you know he seems to be the one that has the most interest, even though you have to give up a draft pick. Ian Kennedy is another guy whose fastball velocity obviously ticked up, but he's been mediocre at best, and I think there's a little bit of pullback on him because you do have to give up the draft pick.
Yeah, he seems like the one guy who maybe waits the longest because of that and maybe gets hurt the most by that draft pick.
Irvine Santana comes to mind.
Right.
Remember a couple years ago, I think that's the guy. Like I think Santana would be, you know, that where he got a 4-year deal at the end, or a 1-year deal. Jimenez got a 4-year deal back a couple years ago. So I think Kennedy has all the makings of that. I wouldn't be surprised. The other guy that's going to get really nicked up is Chen. Great left-handed pitcher. When you look at his overall numbers in the American League East, low 3 ERA, but he's represented by Scott Boras, has a draft pick attached to him. I think he's going to be impacted as well.
It seems like the most sense for Chen would be to return to Baltimore. Obviously, he said he wants $100 million, and that's maybe out of their price range, but when it's all said and done, you just have this Boras Baltimore thing going on throughout this offseason.
Yeah, and it has not been a lot of fun negotiating with him, I can tell you from personal experience, but that's just, you know, the way it is, and the owner, Peter Angelos, has gotten involved in when he's needed to as well. That's, you know, that's the thing. A lot of these high price tag expenses have to have ownership approval. You might as well have ownership involvement. I don't really think, though, from the Orioles standpoint, they are going to spend on one high-priced item. You know, if it's Davis, if I don't see them spending that kind of money on Chen, $90 million or $80 million, even if it comes down to $80 million. The most they've ever spent on a pitcher was Jimenez in that contract. It was a little shaky that first year. I think they're very leery to go into that fourth year with any starting pitcher.
Another free agent pitcher that is new to this whole game here is Yaisel Sierra, declared a free agent, 24-year-old Cuban. He's in the mid-90s with his fastball, has a slider. How does he fit into all of this? Because obviously there's the unknown.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I think that, you know, teams who have the good international scouting, you know, will take a shot at him. You know, a little bit older, 24-year-old. We've had a couple of those Cuban pitchers come out that throw hard and have had success. I always go back to guys like Contreras in particular, or even El Duque or Levan. They threw a little harder. They weren't flamethrowers. I don't know if this guy fits better as a starter or a reliever, but I do think that when you start to look at it, he doesn't fall under the international signing rules, so people won't have to worry about throwing out their budget, so to speak, and going over and getting fined, losing some of their money next year. So I think there'll be some interest in him. You know, Miguel Gonzalez is the other guy that stands out to me, the Cuban pitcher from Philly, who once he signed, had some injuries. We haven't heard much from him since. So I think there's a little bit of cautionary tale with the pitchers coming out of Cuba recently.
Does Sierra end up having to at least start in the minor leagues as well?
It sounds like he's one of those guys going to have to stay in the minor leagues. And I think that also adds to you know, the impact that he might have and the amount of money that he can ask for, certainly as well. So I think he's got a couple things going against him right now.
A lot of people were down on the Los Angeles Dodgers for a long time this hot stove season, missing out on Zach Greinke, and then it looked like they were going to trade for Aroldis Chapman. That fell through after Chapman had the issues off the field. But suddenly, in just a few days, the Dodgers have done what I think we kind of all expected them to do at some point, which is fill those holes that they needed to fill. They go out, they get Scott Kazmir, then a couple days later, they get Kenta Maeda. So suddenly, you get two pitchers who fit nicely into the middle of that rotation.
And both guys that you expect to pitch about, hopefully, 190 innings for them, both. You know, Kazmir has been relatively durable. He's had a lot of wins over the past four seasons and has pitched at a high level. I think he's better than the National League, too. He's got the good changeup. He goes to, you know, into the mix with all the other left-handers out there, obviously. His work ethic and teammate, all of those things that have kind of come with Kazmir recently, I think add value. And Maeda is always that big question, and we always hear from pitchers over in Japan. I've had a couple of evaluators tell me they thought he was a middle of the rotation starter, good slider, doesn't have that blazing fastball, you know, like you've seen, like we heard of Tanaka or Darvish, but he, you know, falls back in there. And I think that the price reflects that, the you know, what the Dodgers are paying for him right now, at least what we've heard. So, not surprised. They do have a huge thing to a huge replacement factor there with Greinke. Greinke, you know, do you look at their wins that they had? Yeah. They had 27 team wins when Greinke was on the mound out of 32 starts. That's almost impossible to duplicate.
Made it interesting. You mentioned the money, and we're hearing 8 years, $25 million, only $25 million guaranteed. Obviously, they have to pay that $20 million posting fee as well back to Japan, but there'll be some incentives in that. But are you surprised at the money that he didn't get more money guaranteed?
I am surprised by it. You know, I think when you look at, you know, some of those other pitchers that have come out of Japan, you know, even Daisuke, you know, they've had that issue about adjustments to the game, whether it's adjustment of the ball, adjustment to pitching every fifth day. They've had a lot of mileage on their arm. So I think all of those things kind of come with it. And you know, they've been a little bit, I think, also the Dodgers trying to play around with the luxury tax, we'll say, because I think they, you know, any dollar they spend that's taxed at a 50% rate. So it behooves them to spread it out over an AAV of, let's say, $3 million and add in incentives. Mm-hmm. It buys them a little bit of time to get that payroll down a little bit and try to get it under the luxury tax moving forward. So I do think there's some of that, you know, in this contract structure, and the player was willing to go along with it.
The Kazmir deal is interesting because he gets 3 years, but he gets an opt-out after 1 year. And it seems like we're getting to the point where almost every big, sizable free agent contract includes an opt-out of some kind. Jason Hayward has two opt-outs in his deal with the Cubs. This didn't really pop up until you saw Alex Rodriguez get one a little while back. But why are we seeing more and more of these?
You know, we saw a couple of them, like you mentioned. They were Scott Boras represented clients for the most part. But even CC Sabathia got one. And we've seen them be successful. You know, the ones that, you know, have been exercised, you saw players sign bigger contracts. And so they've extended this out. Greinke had one, got one involved. It went to his benefit this year as well, turned down $71 million, got over $200 million. So I think when you see that, you know, the agents are reaching for that because it's valuable. I was a little surprised because I don't consider Kazmir at the top of the heap when it comes to deserving or getting an opt-out clause, but it allows him to go back out in the free agent market. He didn't get 4 years. I think he was looking for 4 or 5 years. So in another year, when it's lesser of a marketplace next year, it allows him, if he wants to go out there. I'm not a big fan of these deals. I think they're all of the leverage goes to the player, and he gets the ability to have the guaranteed contract and the ability to opt out, and you still have to replace him if he does opt out. But that's the market right now, and it seems like it's not getting any better, at least right now.
You said it. So far, it's all gone towards the players. But when I look at some of these, David Price, for instance, right now in his prime, he signs this huge deal with the Red Sox. He has an opt-out after 3 years. After 3 years, he's in his mid-30s then. I'm not necessarily sure that's terrible for the Red Sox if he leaves. They could, in theory, get his best 3 years as a major league pitcher, and then he could leave, sign a big deal somewhere else, but then they're not paying the rest of that deal. So
right.
Is there a scenario where this isn't terrible for the team?
Well, I think in that scenario, it's not bad if you're not paying for the back end of the contract.
Right.
So in Price's case, as you're talking about, but they're still going to have to replace
right.
David Price in his quality and in his innings.
Yep.
And who knows where the price is going to be. It might be $40 million a year at that point. So the price tag is going to go up to get a similar type guy. Right. So I do think that they will get the benefit of it in some ways, but they are going to have to spend the money and replace him. And you're going to sit there and say, geez, I wish we had David Price for 30 rather than paying this pitcher $40 million for 7 or 8 years or whatever it ends up being.
Right, absolutely. All right, the other big deal that we've seen in the last week or so is Aroldis Chapman. He heads to the Yankees, and I think everybody was most surprised at the timing of this because it seemed like this was something that we were going to have to wait for the league to go through with the investigation on Chapman and the off-the-field stuff. But the Yankees swoop in, and they weren't the only team still trying to get Chapman, but they end up getting, really, you have to say, a discount as far as what they had to give up to bring in Chapman.
It certainly seems like that. You know, when you look at some of the prospects they've given up, they weren't the elite prospects. They were asking for Aaron Judge or Severino back at the deadline. It was not any of those type guys. They still gave up some talent, but not the quality talent that you would have expected for Chapman. And, you know, I think this is a risk for the Yankees in the sense that you don't know if you're going to have him, you know, miss him for a period of time. I would have to assume you're going to miss him for some period of time.
Yep.
Now, if it's more than 45 days, which is not likely, but if it's more than 45 days, you have him under control for another year. But you have to deal with a lot of criticism within your potential fan base, and a lot of domestic violence groups are have their radar up. And I think the one thing that we've seen with these is, you know, if there's more information that comes out, that's where the risk is going to be. If there's video, we saw it in the NFL with Ray Rice. If the video comes out, you know, all we have right now is a police report that's been, there's been no charges filed. And if that's all it is from this point on, then the Yankees may end up having something as long as he rehabilitates himself. But, you know, you always sit there and knock on wood that maybe there is more information that just didn't get out yet. And if that's the case, the Yankees have a chance to look bad. So is an experienced GM, that's about all that would be willing to go down this road. Yeah. Brian Cashman certainly has the track record, and I think that's he and maybe one other might have been willing to do it.
I'm sure a lot of serious conversations were had within that front office.
Before. With ownership, too, and ownership's involvement, which Hal Steinbrenner of the Yankees said he was involved, too. So, you know, they signed off on it. They did this as an organization. And, you know, you hope from their standpoint that they don't have any more further issues.
We'll see how it pans out as far as that goes. As far as on the field, this is a team that you knew there's questions in that starting rotation. So to be able to put together a bullpen with Dellin Betances, Andrew Miller, and Aroldis Chapman, that certainly eases your mind a little bit that, hey, if we can just get through six, we're going to be okay.
They pieced together the starting rotation last year pretty well, pretty efficiently with guys' injuries and ineffectiveness. And so I do think that they, you know, now, as you mentioned, they shorten the game up. That's a huge advantage we've seen along the way. Who thought the Yankees would copy the Royals ever in anything? You know, when you think about it, that's usually not the case. You know, big market clubs copying the small market clubs. But that design and that model has worked out very well. And it's worked for other teams, too. It's worked in Tampa, you know, with starting pitchers not going as long. So I do think it's a way for the Yankees to you know, keep a little bit of a modester, more modest payroll from what we're used to with them. Scale back a little bit, but still have a really dynamic team.
I was going to say that, yes, they're copying the Royals as far as that dominant bullpen, but the way they got it, a little bit different
little
with
different.
The money they dished out for Miller and then to be able to trade for Chapman.
Little different for sure with the money, like you mentioned, having to give up prospects. It was almost, you feel like it was almost developing with Kansas City, at least with certainly with Holland and Herrera it was, and they traded for Davis. That was a terrific trade for Davis. But you're right. In that sense, it is a little bit different, but the model of having a really lockdown pen. I mean, here, those three relievers were numbers 1, 2, and 3 in terms of strikeouts per nine innings for relievers in the game. They have all three of them. They basically cornered the market on dominating pitching at the back end of the game.
Just got to get that lead early on, and we'll see if the Yankees can do that in 2016. Well, all these players still available. The Hot Stove Podcast is going to continue
to be
exciting as we go on through January and into February. For Jim Duquette, I'm Tim McMaster. Thanks for listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.